Rana and Madhava. Rana and Madhava means Rana is the girl and Madhava is Krishna on the flute. And Punjabi Hari means Punjab means forest or how do you say bush, in the bushes, boy and girl are in the bushes. So it's actually going on in the spiritual world also, but in a different way, in a pure way. And Gopi Jana Balava, I don't know if you can see the gopis in there, but the gopis, you can see the cows. Gopi means the cowherd girls, the cowherd damsels, the ones that milk the cows and look after the cows. And they all love Krishna also. Although Radha is the most beloved, they're all in love with Krishna and they serve him with all devotion. Dinivan and Hari, maybe in the distance you can see a mountain, and that's the mountain which Krishna lifted when he was a little boy. When he was age 60, he had a huge mountain like 20 miles long, over 1,000 feet high, and like an umbrella. All the village, because it was torrential rainstorm, I think it's a long story. And Yashoda Nandana, that means Krishna's mother and father. Krishna has a mother and father. It might seem a little strange that God has a mother and father, but he's omnipotent, he's omnipotent. He has everything that we have and more. So he has mother and father. And Raja Jana Ranjana, he's wandering around the forest with his boyfriends and girlfriends. And this river is called Yamuna. So, thank you. Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
So, you may wonder, well, I'm not here in Vaja, and how am I going to go? We got a lot of Krishna here. And then do I catch the bus, or catch the train? Or, so that is a guidebook, so to speak. And we've already got a good opportunity. These Vedic scriptures, they say, that without Dharma or spiritual awareness, spiritual progress, then we're just animals. We're no different from animals. So, yeah, that's, you know, points the finger on modern civilization, how animalistic it is. Because, you know, we're only engaged most of the time eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This is our main occupation, and we don't put aside much time for finding out the real nature, our real nature. So Dharma means to understand our intrinsic quality, our intrinsic characteristic. And this book, Bhagavad Gita, is teaching our eternal characteristic so that we can be in peace and harmony with existence. So as soon as we forget our character, intrinsic character, then we lose touch with reality. We go into a ersatz, or like an artificial existence, like a dream. Everyone can admit that a dream is something unreal. Although it's, of course, when we're living the dream, it's real. But then when we wake up, we realize, oh, this is substantial. I couldn't find my real happiness in that dream. So the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that even this world we're living in is a big kind of dream. It's a more elaborate dream. We're all collaborating in it. We've all got our part to play in it. But it's still artificial. So this Sanatana Dhamma, or eternal activity of the soul, is something like, it is something irreducible. In modern science, we want to reduce everything to chemicals, atoms, molecules, DNA, RNA, nucleic acids, and so on, and our microscopes and our speculations, mathematical formulas. We want to reduce everything to a simple, unified theory. And the idea is that to unify everything, we must reduce it. But what Krishna's saying is there is a unified theory, but it's spiritual. It can't be reached just by a microphone, a telescope, or a mobile phone, or whatever it is, instrument we've got. Because these senses we have, the very senses we have, are limited. We can't arrive at perfect understanding of the absolute truth by this reductionist process, the inductive process. Because, you know, everyone knows we make mistakes, our senses are limited. I don't know what's going on in the next room. If the lights go out, I can't see. I like to be an illusion. I think this is a snake, you know. Everyone knows this. This is elementary, so to speak. So Bhagavad Gita is teaching another way of receiving knowledge. It's called Shabda Pramana, hearing by sound. learning by sound. Actually, this is most education is by sound. You go to the class and the teacher says, one and one is two.
One and one is two.
Two and two equals four.
Two equals four.
This way.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So this way we learn. Because how can a small kid know one and one equals two? Or two and two equals four? He has to have a drum in his thick skull. From childhood. This is apple, this is orange, this is cow, this is tree, and so on. So our original gurus or teachers are our parents, actually. We learn so much from them. So, Shabda Praman means, just like a child is looking for his father. So you have, just imagine you have an orphan. So an orphan is looking for his father in Brighton. Standing there on the promenade, all these people running past doing the morning exercises. Excuse me, sir. Just spare a minute. They're all gone down the road. And if one of them stopped, are you my dad? Or everyone's lying on the beach in their bathing clothes and bikinis. Excuse me, dad. Are you my father? Leave me alone, will you? Come all the way to Brighton to enjoy myself. Don't bug me. So this way, it's a futile task, you know, this method of trying to go beyond. Because how can I know? How can I be there when I was conceived? I wasn't there. I mean, at least I'm not aware that I was there. So there's only one person that can know. And I have to go to her. I have to go to find my mother and ask her, who is my dad? This is common sense. If we want to know what's beyond our sense perception, we have to go to higher authorities. So this is called Shabda Praman. And Srila Prabhupada is not just one man, you know, like there are many gurus. We've heard of gurus. But Prabhupada, he is representing a long, long line of spiritual masters who are passing on this same message intact down to the present day. So this is the advantage we've got from hearing, just like from a telephone, you hear from long, long away, and by the technology, you can understand what is the message, the truth, whatever's being imparted.
Put the tea on that,
won't you? Whatever it is. We use our mobile phones for these days. I'm coming back in 5 minutes. Put the kettle on, will you? This is the sum total of our realization, mobile realization. So it's on the bodily platform generally. But this kind of knowledge, which is coming through the spiritual masters, it's called disciplic succession, is different. And the original, you may ask, well, where does the knowledge originally come from? It's passed down. You may have seen that there's a party game. You ever play that party game? That everyone's sitting around and then you whisper something in someone's ear. And then they repeat it to someone else. And then you have a good laugh and it comes out after 10 people. But so you may say, well, maybe that's what's happening. You know, because if I say, I don't know if I can think of a good joke like this, but if I say fish and chips, then after 10 people, it will come out as... I said the wrong thing there. Said fish and chips. I should have said pakoras and puris. Pakoras and puris. It's strictly vegetarian. So how would it come out of 10 different people who misunderstood it?
Purple pineapple.
So I said pakora and puris. It came out purple pineapple. Mm. So, but there's a system whereby each spiritual master He's very disciplined. And he's trained to be a pure transmitter, just like a postman. You know, we just saw that this morning we had the postman come to our number one temple stream. And he didn't give anything, but on another day he gave something. And Prabhupada said that is what a spiritual master is supposed to do. He's supposed to be like a postman delivering the goods. He doesn't add anything, he doesn't subtract anything. And then he may not even be so qualified, a good man or a bad man, he may be a rich man or a poor man, but he does the job. He gives £1,000 or $1,000, and you open it up. Wow! Thank you! Thank you, postman. Yeah, and he said, do you have a cup of tea? You just gave me £1,000. He said, no, I've got a job to do. I'm giving many people £1,000 every day. I don't want any credit for myself. I don't want to be put on a big, glorified. I'm just a postman. You see, the guru is supposed to be like that. So there's a training system, and it's going on down to the present day. Lord Chaitanya is saying, Kiva Vipra Kriva Nyasi Shudra Kenyai Ye Guru Tata. Say Guru Hoy. That if you know the truth about yourself and God, this universe, all these things, in other words, Bhagavad Gita, you know the science of Bhagavad Gita, then you can be Guru. Prabhupada says there must be many gurus. The whole world is, we've got so many engineers, so many doctors, we've got so many chemists, we've got so many accountants, and so many teachers. But look at the mess the world's in. Because nobody's teaching the purpose of life, the goal of life, the intrinsic quality of a living being. We don't even know that. When we go to school, do they teach you who am I, why I am born, or what's the purpose of life? They don't teach you that. I remember one time at school, in the physics class, the teacher was called Akka, he was called Akka. And he was thinking, we always imitate him. He wrote this huge formula, like stretched like for miles. So all the complicated mathematical things, you know. And he said, get it down, write it down. So me and my friend were sitting at the back, and we were having, we thought this is absurd, So we put up a hand, and we said, excuse me, sir. He said, what is it? I said, why? He said, don't disturb, don't ask why. Just get it down. Pass it down. Pass it down. You've got a good job, so don't ask why. If you want to ask why, go to the religious instruction class. They're not here to teach why. He thought we were disturbing the class. Actually, we were. We were trying to disturb the class. So he couldn't answer why. So this is a fundamental question for a human form of life. That a human being asks why. Animal doesn't ask why. He can't. It's too much program. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. It's just programmed. If you observe animals, insects, birds, they're programmed. They've got a very slight program. We love them. But they don't have this faculty which human being has. So, one of the faculties that the human being has is that he can hear from higher authority. I just want to read one verse from Bhagavad Gita, and we can have some questions. It's a very fundamental part of Bhagavad Gita. It's teaching us about our identity. And that's a very simple example Krishna's giving. So we start with this invocation. Some of you may know this. Om.
Om. Namo.
Bhagavate.
Bhagavate.
Vasudevaya.
Vasudevaya.
Created every hour in our body. So, you know, every day our body is changing. Literally, the atoms are not the same. So, it's true. This has already been explained in previous verse 2.13. Transference of the atomic individual soul to another body is made possible by the grace of the super soul. Super soul means Krishna, who is also within the heart. He knows what's going on. And he arranges our change into a new body, which is appropriate to our desires and what we've done in this life. The super soul fulfills the desire of the atomic soul as one friend fulfills the desire of another. The Vedas, like the Mandaka Upanishad as well as the Svetasvatara Upanishad, compare the soul and the super soul to
two birds in a tree.
Two friendly birds in a tree, yeah, in the same tree. One of the birds, the individual atomic soul, that's me and you, is eating the fruit of the tree. We try to enjoy it in this temporary dream-like world. And the other bird, Krishna, is simply watching his friend. Just watching. Of these two birds, although they are the same in quality, one is captivated by the fruits of the material tree, while the other is simply witnessing the activities of his friend. Krishna is the witnessing bird, and Arjuna is the eating bird, or we are the eating bird. Although they are friends, one is still the master and the other is the servant. Forgetfulness of this relationship by the atomic soul is the cause of one's changing his position from one tree to another or from one body to another. The jiva soul, that means individual soul, is struggling very hard on the tree of the material body. But as soon as he agrees to accept the other bird as the supreme spiritual master, as Arjuna agreed to do by voluntary surrendering unto Krishna for instruction, the subordinate bird immediately becomes free from all limitation. The dream is broken. The bad dream is broken. The nightmare is over. When we understand, actually, we're not this body, we're eternal, and we have a relationship with Krishna. Both the Mandaka Upanishad and Svetasvatara Upanishad confirm this. Then there's a Sanskrit verse. I won't bother with that. Although the two birds, it's a translation, although the two birds are in the same tree, the eating bird is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. But if in some way or other he turns his face to his friend, the Lord, and knows his glories, at once the suffering bird becomes free from all anxieties. Arjuna has now turned his face towards his eternal friend Krishna and is understanding the Bhagavad Gita from him. And thus hearing from Krishna, he can understand the supreme glories of the Lord and be free from lamentation. Arjuna is advised herewith by the Lord not to lament for the bodily change of his old grandfather and his teacher. He should rather be happy to kill their bodies in the righteous fight so that they may be cleansed at once of all karmic reactions from various bodily activities. One who lays down his life on the sacrificial altar or in the proper battlefield is at once cleansed of bodily reactions and promoted to a higher status of life. So there was no cause for Arjuna's lamentation. Srila Prabhupada King.
Jai.
Thank you very much. It's a little introduction. If there's any questions, we're very happy to try and say something according to these teachings.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Can you explain about karma and reaction? It was talking about increasing karmic reaction. Can you explain how that works? Connected with the transformation of the soul?
So, Bhagavad Gita explains in the 15th chapter, Shariram Yadavatnoti, there's a Sanskrit verse, yep, Chapyukramat, Grahit Vaitari Samyati, Vayo Gandam, Vashaya, that we have two bodies, actually. We have the subtle body, which is the mind, intelligence, and false ego. The subtle body, we can't see it, but we all know we have a mind. And we have this physical body we can see and touch, and so on. So, at the time of death, whenever we get run over by a bus, or whatever it is, or a mug, or atom bomb on our head, the soul is not destroyed. We are not destroyed even by atom bomb. Body is killed. But the body is killed. So as long as you've got this body, you certainly going to die. But the subtle body, the mind and intelligence of the pulse ego, it is what carries us. It's software. You've got hardware and software. So the software is going with the soul, the antimaterial particle, or you've got the spiritron. There's electrons, neutrons, this on and that on. Then we can just call it a spiritron, if you like. It's a tiny particle of consciousness. So that consciousness you have of your mind and your intelligence and your ego, that's not destroyed by even the atomic bomb. And because it's so subtle. And it goes to a higher authority. And they check you out. You may not like the idea, but you just imagine what the government is doing. It's checking everybody out. What are they up to? Through the mobile phones, through the internet. They can check so many things. So what to speak of? Krishna is in everyone's heart. He already knows. So he knows what you want, what you've done, and what you'll be happy with, and what you need to be, how do you say, punished for. I don't like to say that, but according to the law of karma, you can create good reactions, pleasant reactions, or unpleasant reactions. According to how you behave with other people, or with nature, or what you like. Some things will cause suffering, some things will create bodily pleasures in the next life. You'll be born as a king, you can be born as a worm, can be born as a tree, can be born as a beggar, fish or bird. All that information is carried in the subtle body. And that determines what you'll be in your next body. Just like a plant, Krishna gives example, just like a plant has a scent, aroma. You smell a rose, or beautiful rose garden. So you know it's a rose, you know what it's like if you smell something else, some dog stool. You know it's dog stool. So that our consciousness, the contamination of our consciousness, will carry us into an appropriate body in 8 million out of 8,400,000 so many species of life. So this is called karmic reaction. So Krishna consciousness needs to purify our subtle body from all, how do you say, desires, which will bring us back to this temporary material world of birth and death. So there was one boy, there was one relative of Dina's. It was quite funny actually. I saw him swimming with his dogs early this morning on the beach in Brighton. And I tried to preach to him a few times. I don't know what to say. He's a very jolly person. And he said, "How are you, Mahavishnu?" He's in the ocean, he's about 50 yards out with his dogs. It's freezing cold, and I'm just imagining, you know, how cold he must be. But, you know, it's right as rain. So I'm standing there, you know, with my sweater on, feeling cold. And so I think, well, what can I say to him? He's obviously a good swimmer. So I said, "Hey, no! Are you chanting Hare Krishna?" He said, "Well, I chanted last week." And I said, "Well, you're good at swimming, aren't you?" He said, "Yes, I'm good at swimming." And give him some food, don't let him go.
He's just going.
Okay. What Prabhupada used to say, "Let him not sneak out the door. Give him something." So I said, "You're good at swimming, but can you swim in the ocean of birth and death? There's a bigger ocean than this one in Brighton. There's water. And it's ocean of birth and death. This is the big ocean. And you know how to swim in that?" He just started. I said, "You chant Hare Krishna." That's how to swim out of this karmic ocean
ocean of karma, birth and death, birth and death. Next question, please.
So, what does the chanting of Hare Krishna actually do for us? What's in it for me?
It's like it reminds us of who we are, what we are. Now, if you turn on the TV, it reminds you, you know, you're a consumer. I'm a consumer, British consumer. I better have my Coca-Cola, my mobile phone, my car, my house, my wife, my mortgage, and I have this body. You have this body. You're how old are you?
37.
Huh?
37.
And so you're thinking I'm 37. I'm thinking I'm 69. So I'm just thinking I'm so. All the non-spiritual vibrations, they remind us of this body. But this chanting of Hare Krishna, which we don't even have here, every other program I've been, even in Africa, you have a big Hare Krishna on the wall. What's wrong here?
Everybody's got a card, right? Everybody's got a card.
Somebody sold it.
Everyone has a card. It's on a card, Maharaj.
This sound vibration is supposed to be, it's said to be coming from dimension beyond this material world. It comes from beyond the spiritual world, and it's not different from Krishna. So by hearing it, you become Krishnaized. Just like the sun, it will drive away all darkness. So as it rises, so that this holy name of Krishna is so powerful, it purifies all these dirty things in the heart. This is the formula for a social upliftment that we Hare Krishnas have. We're trying to give everyone an easy way to change the consciousness from suffering to real happiness.
What's our relationship with
Krishna? Well, this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we can't leave here. It means, I am yours, Krishna. You can do what you like with me. I'm your servant. It's a cry or a hymn of surrender. O Radharani, please, the girl, she's Radharani, she's like her mother. O Radharani, please, recommend me to Krishna. So, and tell Krishna I'm a nice devotee and engage me in his service. It's a cry of surrender. I want to go home. I want to leave this temporal world of suffering and birth and death and enter back into our natural life, real life. So it has that meaning. O Radha, Hare, means O Radha, Hare Krishna. Please engage me in the service of Krishna. Krishna means the all-attractive, the person, the most lovable person. We're all looking for someone to love, so Krishna means the most lovable, and Rama means the source of all pleasure. So please engage me in the service of such a person. I want to love him, I want to serve him, and I'll be satisfied. So that's what it means.
You're talking about a duality there.
Yeah, there's duality. Krishna Bhagavad Gita says that yes, there's actually there's duality between us and Krishna. Krishna says that we are eternal parts of Krishna. It's like my finger is part of my body. Now, in one sense, there's non-duality because the finger is part of my body. I can say, this is my body. Non-dual. Finger is not part, is non-dual, it's part of my body. On the other hand, my finger is not my body. Understand? See, just like the sun. The sun is shining light in this room. You can say the sun is in this room. It's true. Same time you can say the sun is not in this room. But this is the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Siddhanta, or the basic, how do you say, formula, which is teaching that everything is one with God, We are what we love. We are God. The same time we're different, because we're very tiny. We're the same quality of God, just like a spark of a fire. The same quality as the fire, but the spark is very small. If the spark drops out of the fire, you can't say that the fire has gone out, because it dropped out of a puddle of water. You can't say the fire has gone out, but the spark went out. So this Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is perfect. It incorporates, how do you say, duality and non-duality at the same time. It's practical. So therefore there's a perfect philosophy. It is duality and it's also non-duality. Spiritually we're part of Krishna, but our eternal relationship is like the part to the whole. We have a relationship of love, and bhakti yoga is the way to invoke our natural relationship with Krishna again. But it's on the spiritual level. It is in a non-dual environment, so to speak, in the spiritual environment. But still there's variety because we have a distinct identity. It's a nice philosophy. Very nice. How's the time going?
Just one. Have you ever met anyone who wanted to annihilate their individual identity? Have you met someone who wanted to annihilate their individual identity?
Yeah, I did.
Are you?
It's the only things I try to do. And then people, you know, it's in Africa, you see these boys, you know, they have this glue. You know this Bostik PVA, and they just have it on their nose all the time. They just want to. It's a nice thing to suicide. And there's many kinds of yoga also where you can try and extinguish your identity, but the Vedic scriptures say that although temporarily you may merge with God or merge with the absolute energy because you have the same quality, that after some time, this is not a permanent liberation. After a great deal of austerities and tapasas, you may try and merge with God, but because you don't taste variegatedness of a loving relationship, you cannot maintain it. Just like Prabhupada gives the example. When they shot these first astronauts going around the satellite, around the planet, and you know what they were saying? The Russian astronauts, where is my Moscow? My Moscow. Because a loving relationship is there. You cannot extinguish that loving relationship. It's intrinsic. This is what I was trying to say. This is the Dharma of a living being, to love someone. So you may be fed up with other people, you may be fed up with your own identity, but that's not fundamental to us, that's not normal. We may try to put our head in a voidist identity. I have no identity, like Buddhism. It's a liberation where we deny our identity. But Krishna is saying that the soul is not intrinsically like that. The soul is eternal, that's true. It's also full of knowledge, chit, and full of bliss, happiness. So on your own, without other people, you can't enjoy that bliss of a loving relationship. So that is unsustainable. So a civilization without Krishna is unsustainable, as we see.